Good morning, and welcome to this time of sharing together. I've had a drink now. You were worried that the speaker would be dry. I was speaking at a foreign pulpit one time, and I got some water and spilled some on me. So you're obligated to make some explanation. Well, I said, I assume you were hoping that you wouldn't have a dry speaker. So then out in the lobby, I met an old friend of mine. That's true, we didn't want someone who was dry, but we didn't want someone who's all wet either. So I remember that day quite well. Maintaining our vision through curriculum choices. I hope that this workshop can involve a lot of discussion. I know I have a mic here, I didn't ask for it. And I'm hoping for a lot of discussion from you because it is a subject that probably the most of you are involved in some degree or other. I expect so. Yesterday morning, I was sitting at my desk reading the scriptures and thinking about this topic, and I was reading in Psalm 19. If you have your Bibles, or if you've memorized this passage, just keep them shut and listen and recite them as I read them. But I thought such excellent verses to consider in this particular topic that we are looking at today. Psalm 19, verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping of them there is great reward. As we think of our Christian schools and the work that lies before them each day, I was blessed again yesterday morning as I reflected on these verses. Maintaining our vision also, well, the first verses that popped into my mind was 1 Thessalonians 5:21. Can someone recite it? Oh, come on, try. I'll say prove is the first word. Now you're ready. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good. Thank you. All together. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good. What is our vision for our school anyways? We're all school board members, and at least most, who are not, which of you are not school board members here? Oh, well, maybe you're pretty rusty on some of this then. Those of you who are, what is your vision for your school today? Let's go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What's one?
Maintaining a godly atmosphere.
A godly atmosphere. Number two?
Biblical teaching.
Yes. Number three? It was said half an hour ago, or maybe 20 minutes ago.
Know how to read the Bible.
Give our students, I'm going to broaden that. Give our students a few tools so that they can read the Bible and provide for themselves a living. Number four.
Teach them how to get along with each other.
Oh, yes. How to accept various personalities and work together as a team. We sort of heard that for school boards, but we also do that at school. Number five.
Preparing for life.
And what aspect of life?
All aspects.
All aspects. What one?
Maybe. Service.
Thank you. Preparing for a life of service. At home, every day, abroad. Who knows? Our students don't know. The students I faced in my classroom, I had no idea that Paul would become a preacher for 40 or 50 years afterwards. I just had no concept of that. But hopefully, or Joel back there, some things that we talked about help to prepare them for making them willing to serve. Mennonites, notice no one said preparing them to make a lot of money or preparing them to have a big business. We don't need a lot of drill on that, do we? It doesn't seem like it. That comes quite naturally to many of us, or at least a desire to do that. Now, how were those visions realized in our school? It's one thing to have a set of goals and a mission statement, but then how do we go about in our schools to realize those goals? I wish I would have had a whiteboard here. I would have liked to write down what you said. What was the first one we said?
Maintaining the godly environment.
All right. Now, how do we implement that vision? What's one way? There are many. What's one? That, keep going.
We hire Christian teachers that
will provide a godly atmosphere. I hope so.
And we start the day off with the Bible and prayer and singing.
Yes, very important. Very important. Know God. I think that was maybe about number two. I can go back 55 years in my school involvement. We don't want Christian curriculum because it'd be too much Bible. It'd be too much Bible. Have you ever heard that? I don't think it's said much anymore. But 50 years ago, that was a big thing. There's too much Bible. Is there too much Bible? We don't think so. Could there be too much Bible? There couldn't even be too much Bible. When might there be too much Bible? Yes?
Well, you don't want to make the children all feel guilty for the wickedness in the world.
All right. What about guilty for their own wickedness? Is our goal at school that every child is baptized by the time they're through grade 9? Is that our goal?
No.
No. Now, let us not hinder that. But that is not the goal of our teaching. But what is the goal? If that's not our goal, certainly I want to be understood. We want our children to make a choice to serve the Lord. Absolutely, we do. But what is our goal that will aid them in making that decision? All right. A number of years ago, primary teacher said to me, "What can I have for devotions? I've run out of ideas." I said, "Study Psalm 77:13 and you'll have work for 20 years." Can you quote the last part of Psalm 77:13? Can you, Paul? You can't. Who is so great a God as our God? In your classroom, have you ever, how many of you have taught school? Oh, good, very good. Have you exhausted that subject? You have not exhausted that subject. I never got nearly done exhausting that subject either. It's a huge subject. Huge subject. When, if a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old has had a vision of who God is, what will that produce in him?
The desire to know God.
Yes. What else? That's right.
Humility before God.
Yes. What else?
Reverence for God.
That's real close to what I want you to say.
Realization of accountability.
Yeah, probably.
Not in that age, but coming up.
Yeah. There's another one. You said reverence. Pardon? The fear of God, yes. And reverence is the same thing. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. The beginning of wisdom. And when our students have come to a grasp of who God is, it will produce in them a fear of God. Romans 2, talks about the ungodly and the wicked, there is no fear of God before their eyes. And that leaves a child. If a child gets through my classroom, if a child ever got through my classroom and he had no concept of the fear of God, he was extremely handicapped, and I had totally failed as well. I had totally failed, absolutely. How do we help our children? Another one of our visions is to help our children get along with each other. How do we do that?
Be an example.
Be an example in the things we say about different races. Have you ever heard anyone run down the Sikhs in this country? What kind of truck drivers they are? Have you ever done it? If you go to India and drive their roads for a few weeks, you'd be amazed at how much they have learned that they didn't learn in India. You would be amazed. How else do we emphasize this vision for our schools? Do your schools have recess? Do you have recess? I've already said maybe one of our most important lessons are learned on the playground. Have you ever said that? Have you ever watched your children relating to each other in the playground and thought, you know, they are learning big things out there? Maybe you've thought, they've got a long way to come yet before they make good board members. Hope not. I remember years ago in my classroom when we used to choose teams, and I did not start this. I think I know who did, but I'm not. That doesn't matter. But when I'd have two persons choose teams. Some days, they would start with the least athletic. I'd start, Johnny, choose Bonnie. And then Joe would choose Jack, and he's sort of lame. And then the next one, he can't catch with a bushel basket. And then someone else who always strikes out. And we worked our way up until the most gifted students, players, were chosen last. How many of you were always chosen last when you were in school? Because you were most gifted? No, because you were least gifted. Well, I was. You think you were too, Paul. Well, we got along well. I know I can say that about him. He would say things about me, too. I was usually chosen pretty well last. And I know how it feels. And you can tell when students are picking teams, you know who's going to be chosen last. And you can read that expression on their face, can't you? Sometimes you can. There are other ways to compensate to make everyone feel equal on the playground. If we had a mixed group playing hockey or soccer, I said a girl goal counts 2 points. A boy goal, 1 point. Some of the boys didn't like that, but I think that was just acknowledging their weakness. How do you develop a service mentality at school? How do you help them to learn a serving mentality at school? See, we have lofty visions, and we ought to. But how do we implement this? Yes? All right. All right. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Serving others. Yes. How else?
I think you can organize the opportunity for them to serve. When I taught it, had a girl that broke her leg, and she couldn't go out to play. And so we set up a system where they took turns staying in for the noon hour period.
Mm-hmm.
And so one other girl would stay with her, in with her, and then two boys had to stay in as well. There'd be four people together, then they could play a board game for the noon hour, and then at recess time she came out and watched the others play. But it gave them a chance to serve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
It forced them to serve, but that was good for them.
Well, sometimes that's a learning experience.
The older students often can help the young students, either skate.
Yes. Yep. We used to do that.
We have the privilege of a wheelchair in
mm-hmm.
school.
Mm-hmm.
And the children take care of that child.
That's excellent. Yes. Wheelchairs, different races, non-English students, some of us have had in our schools. That's an excellent chance. Invite someone who has returned from Bulgaria to come and speak to the students about what he sees there and about schooling in that country. Or the Ukraine. Or a big brother goes to Ukraine and have him come back and tell of his experiences and the blessings he received. Always possibilities. Many, many, many possibilities. All right, let's talk a bit more about curriculum. Is curriculum important? Is it? Yeah, I think it is. Is there one part of the curriculum that's more important than another? Maybe depending on the grade level. Grade 1 and 2, you can't really ignore the learning to read, can we? Not really. That's pretty important. As we get older, are there things we can skip? The middle grades or higher, are there things you can skip in curriculum? We're running out of time and the school board wants us to cover all the lessons, so should we skip some parts? What part could we skip? We could skip art. Art often gets skipped for recess, extra recess at some schools. What else can we skip? Should we skip art? Robert, should we skip art? Oh, he just sits there shaking his head. We understand, Robert. Thank you for your dedication. What else could we skip? What should we? Is there something we could skip? Music, maybe? Because we sing every morning. Darren, you don't think we should skip music. Well, nor do I. Could we skip science? All the experiments, they just take a whole lot of time. They really bog you down. Maybe we should skip them. That's not really a good idea either. Maybe we should skip recess then. Is that a good idea? You don't think that's a good idea? No, I'll tell one thing that we learned years ago. Us teachers, I don't know, before we got together that night, we maybe banged our head on a low doorway or something. But we decided, let's beg our school board and see if we can reduce our recesses to 5 minutes and lunchtime to half an hour and then get out at 2:30 instead of 3:30. Do you remember those days, Paul? There was a school board meeting and we got their permission and then we were going to do it for the rest of the week and the following week and then have a parent-teacher meeting on Friday night. And we were going to discuss it from a parental viewpoint. All of us teachers, by the end of the first week, declared we will never suggest anything so unproductively radical as we did that time. It was just absolutely, especially the lower grade teachers were just frustrated. I remember one teacher coming down to my room almost crying. She said, the children are just not working. They're just not working. I admit our students had been trained to have a 15-minute recess and having that shut down to 5 minutes, it just was too upsetting to them and it did not work. Here we are in spring break. One year we talked our school board into not having spring break so we can get out a week earlier in June. And by May we decided we would never suggest that again. We would never suggest that again. So there's not much we can leave out. I don't think there is. Are there any gaps in our curriculum where you as a school board or you as a teacher need to fill in? Oh, a big gap, isn't it? Yeah. Robert?
We're weak on geography, maps, and diagrams.
We don't need maps anymore. We have GPS. Pardon?
That's nonsense.
Amen. You said it. I didn't need to. Thank you. We're weak on, he said, geography. Some of our schools don't even teach geography as a subject. I always included geography when I was teaching. I believe in it. I think there's value in teaching local geography. You'll never find a geography course all made up for Waterloo Region or for Perth County. At least I'm not aware of that. Becca Publications does not carry a geography for Waterloo Region, nor does CLP. We're weak on local history. I cite this as an example. I'm not casting reflection on anyone. But if I talk to someone whose last name is Friesen or Harder or Dirksen, I might ask, when did your families come to Canada? They don't know. At least many of them don't know. That's my impression anyways. Maybe I've always asked that question to the wrong person. And the rest are all brimming with information. I hope so. But that's just one example. Why are you living in Canada and not in France or not in Pennsylvania? We're not in Mexico or Paraguay or the Ukraine. Do you know?
Our forefathers came to Canada.
Well, that's an easy answer, isn't it? Why did they come?
They didn't like the country where they were, no freedom of religion.
When did they come? When did they come? When did Ralph's forefathers come to this country? When did the Gerbers come to Canada?
Well, I can tell you the Gingrichs came in 1834.
Some of the Gingrichs.
That's my, would be my grandfather's. All
right.
Side.
Well, that's pretty close for the Gerbers then, too. The first Gingrichs, I was told, came in 1825. Pardon?
I don't think so, but maybe.
Well, the first Gingrichs that settled on Willow Creek Farm, Wilma Township, just outside New Hamburg. Well, I wasn't there either. It was 1825, but I was told that Mr. and Mrs. walked from Pennsylvania. Uh-huh. And on Christmas Day, she gave birth to a little boy. Who maybe was a Hondrich. Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Mm-hmm.
First white in Wilmington.
And he became a preacher. And he became a preacher in the Reformed Mennonite Church. Well, I think the Hondrichs somehow or somewhere or other became part of the Reformed Mennonite Church. Where's the nearest Reformed Mennonite Church? Who knows?
Amory.
Almost Amory. It's called. It's called Mennonite Corner, yes, which is, Mennonite Corner is even shown on the map, isn't it? Where did there used to be another Reformed Mennonite church? Well, I was going to say Kingwood. You remember when there was a church here? You don't, but there used to be one, and there used to be one in New Hamburg, too. But that cemetery out here isn't Reformed Mennonite, is it?
That's an old Amish Mennonite one.
That's Amish.
Just out, like, on the main road here?
Yeah. Okay. You say that's old Amish Mennonite.
Really old. Before they had church buildings at all. Okay, so there's this real long narrow strip that is then beside that there's something else. And I'm not sure what the bigger one is.
All right.
Okay, so that could be Reformed, I don't know.
Well, that sounds right. Jason Schrock from Oregon was in our home one weekend and he wanted to come to Kingwood to go to this cemetery because some of his Amish relatives are buried there. Schrock is an Amish name. But the Schrocks all had girls. So the name in Perth County has been lost, he said. There's one Schrock in Iowa, but the rest have, lost. So anyhow, in our teaching, we mentioned local history, geography, local geography. Most of my teaching, while I was teaching, I was also trying to be a farmer. Many of my students had farm background, and so we talked about the volume of silos. We talked about how much concrete it took to make a silo. We talked about how much concrete it took to make the big vacuum towers at the big nuclear plants at Pickering after we were there on a school trip. 130 feet in diameter and 135 feet high and 3-foot walls. And how much concrete that took to make that silo. If we were harvesting corn, could one combine fill that silo in one season? At that time we were colorblind. Could one combine fill it? I forget. It would take 4 or 5 weeks of steady 24-hour work.
If it was cleaner, maybe.
Then it would maybe get it filled. Well, it would maybe not an F2. Yeah. Today we have lots of choices in curriculum. You knew that. And that's what this focus is to be a bit about. In 1969, there were very few choices. The only Christian material that I knew of, that we knew of, Rod and staff had started their reader series, and they had readers for grade 1 to 4. And I believe by that time, Pathway had published their readers, the grade 5 to 8 readers. I think we used them the first year or two. I can't insist, but I think that at least they were available. I remember in 68 or 69, we took a tour through Rodden's staff one Saturday, and I remember walking past the office. It was even poorly lit, and I don't know why, and there sat Lila Berkey working on the beginning chapters of the Bible Nurture Reader series. That was in 68 or 69. It was interesting. I have heard that at least some of the feeling at the Rodden staff board was that this effort won't fly. It won't fly. We're talking about maintaining the vision. Partly we're talking about we have seen a vision evolve. We have seen a vision evolve. And I believe that vision will continue to evolve. I talked with someone from Rodden staff yesterday, how many schools and homeschools do you service? He said it's impossible to tell because a lot of their goods go to wholesalers that distribute. The biggest wholesaler he mentioned was in Kentucky, of all places, and they cater to the classical school movement, whatever that is. But it's not necessarily a Christian school movement. This year they got 1.5 semis of Rodden staff material. This classical school movement. We could talk about CLP. CLP started after Rodden staff, and I'm not sure, maybe about 10 years after. We were in Romania one year and Ukraine with part of their summer teacher orientation, and the reach that CLP is making into Asian schools, to the Marshall Islands, they send a container periodically. A container. Now, I don't know if that's a 20-foot or a 40-foot container. If in the Ukraine, they have set up Christian Light Academy. No, it's in Romania. Maybe Ukraine, too. I forget. And that is, to me, it's a bit of a joke. Christian schools are not acceptable, or at least they're not highly acceptable in, I think, Ukraine. And so they have set up an organization they call Christian Light Academy. And students in Romania are enrolled in the Christian Light Academy, which is a school in the U.S. And they're doing English classes. And the government authorities say, wow, we have students enrolled in a U.S. school learning English. We support this wholeheartedly. At least that was the case 5 years ago. It may have been changed by now, but that is opening the door for that curriculum to. In fact, I said if Michael Yonsei would get all the CLP curriculum translated into Russian and make it available to the Russian churches, the market would be as large as the North American churches, more North American market. I have no figures on that. But you who have taught school might be interested. Grace Press, Michael works for Grace Press, and they have translated God's World, His Story. I know I'm suspicious when you said to your students, pull out your God's World, His Story, there was a semi-audible groan. God's World, His Story has been translated into Russian, and that is one of Grace Press's biggest sellers. Biggest sellers. The book that our students groaned about. Many in that country have never heard a Christian version of history. But we have Rod and Staff, we have COP, and then we have Becca, we have Bob Jones, we have Answers in Genesis. They have a complete curriculum. I have never seen it. We have Pathway. It's not complete. We have ACE and BCE. You hardly ever hear about ACE anymore. CLP bought the rights to an ACE spinoff, and they built their curriculum on that. We have BCE. Some people said the CLP is too hard, and let's go BCE, which is easier. We have the parochial school system. We have Eastern Mennonite Publications. Now, how do we choose? That's supposed to be the conclusion of this talk. Well, what considerations should we make? What fact is true, absolutely true? Every curriculum reflects the beliefs and biases of the publishers. A publisher will not promote something, will not sell something that is contrary to their basic beliefs. And so, we need to be aware that publishers with a non-Mennonite background have certain biases and certain beliefs that run counter to some of the beliefs that we hold dear. For example,
non-resistance, non-conformity, separation of church and state, child evangelism, marriage. Anybody know marriage?
Maybe, I've never seen that, but it could be. This list that I read is not complete. If you'd go to a homeschool convention, there would be another dozen. I'm suspicious. And most of them look sort of three-quarters good. Did we catch all the biases that we should be aware of anyways?
Patriotism.
We mentioned church and state. Patriotism is a very strong one. Oh, there's another one. Could be. All right. Many of those churches publish that. There's another one.
Literal six-day creation can come into some of them.
It might. Not Answers in Genesis. What about the sports emphasis? Becca Math works in problems about baseball players and not hockey players. They don't know about hockey from that land of eternal summer. But the rest of us are playing hockey when he's picking his strawberries. But then after the hockey season is over, we can still have strawberries. But this year we couldn't play hockey either. And so, many of our schools are using at least some of that curriculum from those publishers.
Another difference, though, is the amount of emphasis on practical Moravian staff is much higher than something like a Becca, which still has the idea that the student is going to go beyond into university, and so they teach less practical sciences and more theoretical stuff.
That could be. I have never really used Becca science. I have looked at it a bit, and I'm a Rod and Staff fan when it comes to science. The child evangelism thing. I mentioned Bob Jones. I did a bit of supervisory work in a school, and they were using Bob Jones curriculum with grade 1 and 2, and I had a reading lesson with them one day. And that curriculum just reeked with child evangelism. Now, that school wasn't real far from here. If you are using Bob Jones and reading with grade 1 and 2, I want you to go home and look real carefully at those books and really consider the impact that they can have. I don't know who made that decision to use that curriculum. I don't know. Who makes decisions? Who makes curriculum decisions in your school? The school board. Well, we hope so.
The school board doesn't know enough about it.
Well, that's why we have meetings like this, I guess. Sometimes the school board isn't familiar with all the idiosyncrasies of some of these things. When do you change curriculum? When your teacher suggests it, don't we? Your teacher comes with an idea, and I think this would be a whole lot easier and much more effective. Oh, really? Well, let's try it then. We'll put the old books in the cupboard, and we'll get a new, if you think it's good anyways. You know Betty Ann down the road there, that's what she uses, and she really likes it. Well, God bless you. Maybe you will too then. Who knows? That's not always a good way to make decisions. That's not. I know we have curriculum committees, but I'm not sure some curriculum committees maybe exist mostly in name. But do they really take those textbooks home and read them and study them? Maybe the first chapter, but if they have time, not always does that happen. Some other curriculum, in some curriculum, there's a difference between what the students are expected to do, and they can get away pretty easily. Some curriculum, I say, is easy, basically filling in the blanks. Some curriculum is harder. I know someone related to this BCE, individualized program, told me one time that he followed the format of CLP, but they took out all the assignments where students had to write essays. They took them all out, just eliminated them. Students love if they don't have to write essays. But ask them to teach a Sunday school class 10 years later. And well, let's read the introduction to the lesson now. Blah, blah, blah. Do you have anything you want to say? Okay, well then let's look at the Bible verses. Too many of our Sunday school classes follow that format, I'm afraid. And maybe they should have written more essays when they were in school. Some curriculum is discerned for individual learning. Individual learning has a place in a homeschool setting, but homeschool settings have other disadvantages. Individual learning has a difficulty if you're trying to blend your students together as a team. Johnny can do a light unit almost in his sleep. And his brother or his classmate struggles and has to repeat the light units because he didn't get 80%. That is a fact of life in adulthood. Adulthood. But do we want to set the basis for dividing people in groups according to their achievement when they're in school? I don't think we can afford it. I was happy that the reading this morning about that college, they've eliminated the honor roll. There's no honor roll anymore. But high school, we always had an honor roll. It was in the showcase. It was first class honors and second class honors. And you could go and check if your name was there. And they were even ranked according to how high their average was in their final exams or a term exam. I'm not even sure. But if you were on the top of the first class honors, you were pleased with yourself. But if you were on the bottom, you didn't feel so great. And in our schools, there's a real need to blend the individual students together. I have had students who could learn very well. I had a student one time, I wanted a class to say Alexander the Great, and they weren't saying it. And I can tell a fellow in grade 7 and 8 knew the answer. And I said, who was it? And I pointed to him. Well, the name was Alexander the Great, and he had one blue eye and one brown eye. I didn't know that. But this lad knew that. He had one blue and one brown eye. I don't know which one he used most of the time. But he couldn't always hit the ball. He often struck out. Or he'd hit the first base and he'd run and he wouldn't get there on time. But he learned. He learned to chuckle when that would happen. And didn't allow it to bother him. I had a student who had all kinds of trouble learning. She had had some medical problems when she was a little girl, and maybe that impacted her abilities, and learning was very difficult. After she was out of school, she got working in a big farrowing barn, and she started doing all the surgeries on the little piggies. And the owner of the operation commented to her one time, you must be really smart. When you do surgeries, all the piggies live. But the person who did them before would do a surgery and usually the piggies died. You must be pretty smart. She went home to her mother and said, he thinks I must be pretty smart. I have never heard anyone say that. Well, it's to me it is a blessing as I think of Agatha and how she has discovered something that she can do with her little flexible fingers that I would never tackle at all. And others have tried and they made a mess of it. But it has given her a real boost. We had trouble doing that at school. We tried. We did one thing a couple years, and it helped her some. But she always struggled. She always struggled through school. I'm happy that she has found a place where she can rest. Something else I'd like to comment on. Some of us, over the years, have developed a distaste for things rod and staff. I would like to comment that rod and staff curriculum has major changed since they first started publishing. And if you base your opinion on what they were publishing in 1990, you maybe would do well to take a look at what they are publishing today. They call it revisions. I would tend to call it just simply rewriting. For instance, mathematics, 40 years ago, Unit 1 was addition, Unit 2 subtraction, Unit 3 multiplication, Unit 4 division, Unit 5 everything else. The attitude in math curricula years ago, when I started teaching, we had to use public school textbooks. They used an incremental approach. One day, maybe 2 days, you were adding, and then 2 days you were subtracting, and 2 days multiplying. And then when you finished that chapter, you started the next, and you'd go adding and subtracting and multiplying and dividing. And then chapter three, you do the same thing. I sat in a rod and staff meeting one time, and they were talking about the incremental approach in teaching mathematics, and they said, that won't work. That won't work. But rod and staff is using it today. And they're introducing, and they're not, that whole unit, addition used to include addition of whole numbers, addition of fractions, addition of decimals, addition of measures, and then subtraction in the same routine, which some of us said we don't appreciate that. But that has changed. That has changed. Rod and Staff's math curriculum, I think, is their biggest seller. Even a lot of Old Order Amish schools are using Rod and Staff math courses, according to the man I talked with yesterday. They're shipping a lot to they don't ship directly to schools, but they ship to wholesalers, Amish wholesalers, who sell or distribute in their local schools. The English classes, English textbooks that we first used in the 1970s, a lot of the lessons almost made a spiritual application. Are you letting God's Spirit help you to get this lesson right? Have you prayed before you started the lesson? Have you cleared away any mental blocks that would make this lesson difficult to complete? And then at the end of the chapter, they had a test, and then they had a real test. And they asked a bunch of questions that would focus on that kind of question. Have you cleared your mind of everything that would be of a bad attitude? Have you prayed that the Lord would help you? Are you clear of any? Have you conscientiously done all your work? And that was the real test. Well, it was the real test. And Rod and Staff has eliminated those questions and those lessons from their English textbooks because they were placing an undue emphasis on the child's conscience. God bless you in your choices.